They load up with extra bigs. Burkhead, the tailback. Devlin, the fullback. Brady under center. Burkhead, left side, plows into the end zone. And the Patriots have won the AFC Championship. The Patriots have won the AFC Championship in overtime. And the Chiefs never got a chance to have the football.
And that's why we need to change overtime rules. That's been a contention of a lot of people, especially Chiefs fans, since that happened on Sunday. But the bottom line is the defense didn't get the job done again. And the Chiefs are sitting at home when the Super Bowl rolls around a couple weeks in Atlanta. Tough pill to swallow. But the new news, of course, yesterday, Bob Sutton being dismissed as the Chiefs defensive coordinator after six seasons. Here to talk about that and what the Chiefs may need to do this offseason is Matthew Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. He has an article on his website. Go there and check it out now that is covering the Bob Sutton dismissal yesterday with the Chiefs. And Matthew, thanks for joining us. We always appreciate the time. We picked a good time to have you on the show as the Chiefs didn't waste a lot of time. And now they're looking for a new defensive coordinator. This is something that I think pretty much almost everyone agrees with, needed to happen. Some would say a year too late, but it has finally happened.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised at the way that it unfolded. Maybe it was a case that, you know, Bob Sutton didn't want to retire. Maybe he didn't want to go away. That's kind of the way I figured this might go down. But they did move quickly. When it's a coordinator, I mean, you need to. Typically, when the Chiefs under Andy Reid have reorganized their staff in any way, it's usually been a little bit later in the offseason when they unveil it, and the tweaks are usually fairly minor. But if it's a coordinator, you need to go get the guy that you want. So that's why you have to jump on it. It was still, I think, a little bit faster than some people expected, especially the way that Reid discussed things on Monday about wanting to take his time, and then 24 hours later, he makes the move. But you're right. I mean, you know, for what the fans wanted, if you want a fresh start in 2019 with this defense, it was time to make a move.
Well, I know Bob Sutton's a nice guy and all, and I've talked about it before. Turner Gill was a super great guy, but he still was fired at the University of Kansas. Terry Allen was a nice guy. Nice guys get fired in jobs all the time across the country for not getting it done. And, you know, I last year after the season was over, to me, the perfect offseason was to let go of Bob Sutton, find a new DC, and give the keys to Patrick Mahomes. But we predicted on our show that the Chiefs would do one of those two things, but not both. And that's exactly what they did. They did one. They gave the keys to Mahomes. Great move. Let Alex Smith go, the number one rated quarterback to NFL last year. Terrific move, but didn't do the other. Now they have, and so now you have to move forward. And I think for some people, and at least for me, I feel a little bit better about the loss on Sunday, because if there is any little silver lining, and trust me, I did not want the Chiefs to lose. I'd rather have them in the Super Bowl and then worry about Bob Sutton after the Super Bowl, win or lose. But I think maybe this is one step back to go two steps forward. And in Bob Sutton's defense got worse each and every year. And I heard when he first came on with the Chiefs 6 years ago, that the thing was he was aggressive and this and that. Well, at the end, he wasn't aggressive at all. He let Tom Brady sit in the pocket and throw and have all day. He did that in other games as well, didn't blitz a lot. He didn't have a lot of creativity. And to me, what the Chiefs need in defensive coordinator, I'd like to see if you agree with this or not, they need three things, in my opinion. Aggressiveness, creativity, and unpredictability. And if they have those three things, I think this move will allow the Chiefs to be the class of the AFC for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, I think those are three pretty good things as far as what you're looking for in a defensive coordinator. You're right. I mean, in today's NFL, you do need someone who's a little bit more outside the box, a little bit more creative. And, you know, hey, in Bob Sutton's case, maybe that was just the case of just the game catching up with him. He's going to be 68 years old next week. Now, hey, Andy Reid's not that far behind. He's going to be, I think, 61 this year. Mm-hmm. But he's obviously an offensive genius. I mean, we've seen that more than once in Kansas City, and the way that he developed Mahomes and the things he came up with, concepts for him, I mean, that's obviously still puts him on the cutting edge. You're looking for somebody who can be a little more creative with what you're doing, because there is talent there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the Chiefs believed, you know, going into this whole thing a year ago, that it was a two-year rebuild. And that was a little bit of the philosophy of sticking with Bob Sutton, is that, you know, they didn't feel like that it was a one-year fix, that it was going to take 2 years. So that gave you the opportunity to give Sutton one more season to see if, with an influx of talent, if things would get better. And they didn't get better. Now, there's some holes still to fill. I mean, they've got some free agents. They've got some things to look at there. They've got some things to do when it comes to free agency, when it comes to the draft. You've got to have somebody who can take the talent that you've got right now and get the most out of them. And I don't think you could say that happened this year.
No, you're absolutely right. And it's unfortunate because I think a lot of people saw it coming, that what's going to stop the Chiefs from winning the Super Bowl or making a Super Bowl would be the defense. And let's talk about we'll get back to the defensive coordinator position in a moment. But let's talk about the game on Sunday against the Patriots. The offense really struggled first half. Offensive line really struggled. The defense, people are giving the defense a whole bunch of credit. The Patriots went up and down the field. The defense made one huge play, and that was the pick in the end zone, which was obviously a big mistake by Brady and a great play by the Chiefs. But they still gave up 14 points. They were on the field for 20, I think, minutes of the first half. The offense didn't have it a lot. But yet the offense still, when they had the ball, didn't do much with it. And I hear people say, well, the first half is where we lost the game. We should have taken the ball, not deferred. I've heard all kinds of things. I'm sure you have, too, of why the Chiefs lost. The offense stunk in the first half. The offensive line's fault. Mahomes gave up 3 points by taking a sack. He missed a wide-open receiver. I don't know how you can put this on the offense myself. But what I look at, Matt, is despite all that stuff that went against the Chiefs, the defense wasn't great first half, but did hold them to 14 somehow. The offense barely had the ball, didn't do a great job. Despite all that, the Chiefs led 21-17 and 28-24 with 2:03 to go. And from that point forward, that's where I judged the game. The Chiefs came back and rebounded from all that, had the lead not once but twice, and it was like a broken record all year long. In all the games the Chiefs lost, the offense would get them a lead, except for Seattle, where they would come back to within one score, just need a stop to take the lead, and could never get it. It seems like every Chiefs fan in America, including myself and probably you as well, was screaming at the TV or at the game every single game the Chiefs were struggling in, one more stops. All we need, just give us one more stop. Where do you put the blame Sunday in the Chiefs' loss?
Well, honestly, I think there's blame to go around to a lot of different places.
Yeah.
You talk about the first half, and the offense was horrible in the first half.
It was.
I mean, it really was. And the defense wasn't great. And both those cases, you do have to give a little bit of recognition to the Patriots, because I think that they had a great game plan on both sides of the ball, and they executed it perfectly. So there is that.
Yes.
The defense did you a little bit of a favor in the sense that that game could very well have been 7-0 at half. It could also have been maybe 21-28 to nothing at
yes.
the half. So, overlooked a little bit in that first half was probably a coaching error on Andy Reid's part, which is, taking a timeout on third down with the Patriots when it looked like the Patriots were just content to try and run out the clock and get to halftime. And Andy Reid tried to get greedy. He took the timeout to try and save the offense a little bit more time. Ends up happening, Patriots convert the third down. They decided to just go ahead and give it a shot at trying to pick up the conversion, and they got it. If they had just gone ahead and run out the clock, they could have gone a half down 7-0.
Well, let me jump in on that one real quick. Let me jump in on that one real quick, because I see that one a little bit differently, because once again, I don't know, because the defense is so bad, that looks like a bad decision. But Andy Reid did this in other games, and you want to put your best unit on the field, right? So the best chance to get your unit on the field before halftime, when they didn't do anything, was to somehow get your offense on the field. If Andy Reid did anything wrong, in my opinion, it was he trusted the defense to get a stop on 3rd and 5, and maybe he was thinking the Patriots going to run the ball anyway after calling a timeout. I get the point that you're trying to make. That ended up being a mistake because the Patriots did get it, but in theory, isn't that what you're supposed to do as a coach? Just don't give up on the half, because you do have the best offense and the best quarterback in football?
Yeah, well, I think that's kind of where maybe the question mark comes to, which is that the question was, do you take the ball with maybe 40 seconds left in the half and 3 timeouts,
mm-hmm.
or do you try and force the ball, get yourself an extra 30 seconds with that offense?
Right.
The timeout gave the Patriots a chance to think about it, group up, get their best play possible, when it looked like at that point that they were not going for it. They were content to just go ahead and run as much clock and punt the ball away. I think that Chiefs proved it later. You give Patrick Mahomes 3 timeouts and 40 seconds,
yeah,
he can get in the end zone.
Right.
So, you probably could have accomplished it without giving the Patriots an opportunity to regroup and set themselves up for that conversion when you hadn't stopped on any third downs yet. But in the second half, yeah, I mean, the offense did everything it could. But it was also, once again, you know, a common theme in a lot of these Chiefs losses has been that they got to jump on teams. If they don't get the early lead, if they don't, if they don't get the early advantage, it is a defensive breakdown. I mean, that is where the systemic problem was. Because if they didn't have the big lead, they couldn't hold on. And that was what happened here. Even though they took the lead, they didn't have the defense to get the stops down at the end. And it was just, it was one play. I mean, you stop any one of those 13 third down conversions. You stop one third and 10 out of three in overtime, you win that game most likely.
And we have Matthew Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com, our guest today, talking Chiefs football after they lose in the AFC title game on Sunday. You know, here's the thing I look at, and I give the offense a pass, and maybe I'm wrong in doing this, but how many bad halves of football did the offense have all year long? And you can't think of too many. How many bad halves did the defense have? A lot. The Chiefs, you're right, they were front runners. When they got a lead early, that allowed the defense to be better at home, because in home games, the Chiefs, it was pretty simple. You defer, the defense would get a stop early, which is exactly what they tried to do against the Patriots. But in this occasion, the Patriots went 8 minutes and took a whole bunch of time off the clock and ran it right down the Chiefs' throat and got a touchdown. But you're absolutely right. There was so much pressure on the offense to almost score every time. And when you had a situation where the offense, hey, we struggle a little bit early in the ball game, the Chiefs get behind, they could never really catch up for the most part or keep the lead when they did come back and rally, because the defense didn't do what they're supposed to do. You got talent on this defense. I mean, Dee Ford, Chris Jones, Justin Houston, Eric Berry when he's healthy, Kendall Fuller I think is a good player. I mean, that's 5 of 11 right there. It just astounds me that the Chiefs defense was so bad. And I hear the argument, well, the Chiefs offense scores too quickly. Well, the Chiefs offense also allowed the Chiefs to have such big leads that to where they could pin their ears back defensively and lead the league in sacks. But I look at every single loss, you're absolutely right. Every single loss, when the offense, God forbid, wasn't lights out to start the game, and even when they weren't, they still, in every one of those games, came back and had a chance to win. I mean, the Patriots, they were down 24-9, came back led not once but twice in that game, and the Chiefs defense can't get a stop on the final drive, and Brady milks the clock, and they win it. We know what happened in the game the other day in the AFC title game. You're down 14-0. You come back, you take the lead not once but twice. Against Seattle, they were down 2 scores. They came back, cut it to 1 score multiple times. Defense could never get a stop. The Chargers, they had a 14-point lead, and the defense can't get a stop in the final 5 minutes and can't stop a 2-point conversion. And the Rams, as Mahomes had all kinds of turnovers in that game, and they still had the lead 51-47, and the defense couldn't get it done. I mean, to me, I just don't know how you can put a lot on this offense.
No, I don't think that you can. I mean, hey, wouldn't it be great if the offense comes out in the first half and does a little bit more? Absolutely. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I'll give you another boogeyman if you want, because Dee Ford's taking a lot of grief for the offsides, and you can't commit that penalty. I mean, you absolutely can't. There's some other, you know, circumstances in there too. You know, there's some talk that maybe that Ford was getting close throughout the game, and the officials usually warn a player and a coach in that situation that it's happening and to watch it, and they didn't in this situation. I mean, as a matter of fact, you watch the official on that play. He puts his hand on a flag the moment he sees Dee Ford line up and just waits for the snap to throw the flag.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, there's another one out there, and that's Kareem Hunt.
Yes, I was. Oh my God, I was just thinking about this last night in bed. Go ahead, I totally with you.
Up 28-24. That point in the game, which you want 3 minutes left.
Yep.
That's your closer time. You give the in the past last year and a half, first year and a half, you know, with the Kareem Hunt, you were able to give him the ball. He pounded it. He salted away the clock. That was it. Without him, the Chiefs had a much harder time doing that. They didn't rely and trust, I don't think, Damian Williams as much. And part of it was that, defense is keyed on him. I mean, and those situations, it made it more difficult. But here the Chiefs were up 28-24, and instead of feeling like they had the confidence to run the ball and grind up the clock, they started that drive with, I think, 6 straight passes from Mahomes, because he was their closer. He was the guy that they felt like that was the only one that could salt it away and put it away. And you run 6 straight plays in that situation, you're not going to run clock.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. So, you know, that to me, I mean, if Kareem Hunt was still a member of the Chiefs, they win that game. Absolutely.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's exactly what hit me last night when I was lying in bed for some reason. And because, you know, out of sight, out of mind sometimes. But Kareem Hunt absolutely killed the Patriots last year in the first game of the season. And he had a really good game against the Patriots earlier this year as well. And he's just a tougher, more durable runner than Damian Williams. That's not a knock on Damian Williams, but there's a reason that he was out there available to be picked up by any team in the offseason. And Damian Williams did a really nice job. But I'm with you, because I thought the same thing. You know, the Chiefs were down 24-21. They had that drive. And they scored very quickly. And they had the big pass play, the Watkins, which some people think was a pick play, which, you know, you could argue that, certainly. And you get down to the two, and then people said, well, you should just you run it two times and try to milk the clock. Well, you couldn't, because the play clock was winding down. You had to snap it before the two-minute warning. Plus, the Patriots had three timeouts. So if you run it twice or take a knee twice at the one, and you're now in third down and goal, you don't want to put yourself in that position where then if you don't get it on third, you got to make a good decision whether or not to kick a field goal, fourth and inches, or go for the touchdown. The Rams are faced with the same dilemma. They decide to take the points and tie instead of go for the lead late in the game in that situation. But I was thinking the exact same thing. You know, we talk about the Chiefs scoring too fast. In that instance, they did. They scored too fast. Both defenses were gassed in that game. And you're absolutely right. If you have Kareem Hunt, you can be a little bit more methodical, moving the ball down the field and milk some more clock. Now, having said that, it's all hypothetical, because what if the Chiefs milked it down to 45 seconds and the Patriots had one timeout in 45 seconds? I mean, with this defense, I'm not going to tell you that Brady couldn't go down and still do what he did.
Yeah, and I want to underscore and make sure that everybody knows, 200% of the problem of why Kareem Hunt's not on the Chiefs is Kareem Hunt.
Absolutely.
There's nobody else's fault. I mean, it was all his fault. So, you want to blame someone, blame Kareem Hunt,
yes,
because he's the one that created that situation. And you're right. I mean, you know, you even if you give Tom Brady that much time, maybe he does come down, because he's done it plenty of times before. But, yeah, I mean, I think it just totally changes it. And maybe that's a fault of Reed, too. I mean, maybe he should have tried to lean on Damian Williams in that situation. Maybe they could have tried to be more methodical. But, you know, I think we talked about it before. You know, once you lost Kareem Hunt, your best closer on this team is Patrick Mahomes. And that's what Reed did. He trusted his quarterback to get the job done. And they moved the football. They just probably moved the football a little bit too quick.
Okay, so here's something, too, that I thought about. We talk about the Chiefs' offensive struggles in the first half. Once again, it's a hypothetical, though. You know, Andy Reid, I thought early in this game, was pretty conservative. Came out with a couple of runs. If you've got the best quarterback on the planet. To me, I was thinking he's going to come out slinging it, and he didn't. And then on top of that, Damian Williams, I mean, I think Chiefs ran for, what, 41 yards in the game total, which usually doesn't get it done. But like you said, Mahomes, your best player. He's your closer. He's also your opener. For me, he's your opener and your closer and everything in between. And without Kareem Hunt, you know, I understand trying to establish the running game. If they had Hunt, I think that first half's a little bit different too, because instead of second and nine, you've got second and seven. Hunt's going to get a couple of tough yards. It's a different play call. Maybe down the line, third and six, it's third and four. But we'll never know, because Hunt didn't play in the game. But were you a little bit surprised by the play calling in that first half? Because it did seem like it was a little bit conservative early on.
You know, I don't think it was meant to be conservative. Uh-huh. I mean, I think they were trying to push the ball, but the Patriots did a couple of things that just really confused them, uh-huh, and it really got them out of their rhythm and a little bit off their plan. You know, the Patriots came out and challenged the Chiefs, which most teams don't do. I mean, they would come up to the line. They were pushing these guys man-to-man on the outside. They were doubling Tyreek Hill, which the Patriots haven't typically done. Usually they go after Travis Kelce. That's the guy that they've tried to stop in the past. But this time the Patriots were like, hey, we're going to get in the face of the Chiefs. We're going to push these guys at the line. We're going to double Hill, and we're going to blitz. And I don't think the Chiefs were expecting any of those things. I mean, they were looking for a different approach from Belichick, and he crossed them up. I mean, he really did. And I think that took them a couple of drives to kind of get, you know, adjust to that. And, you know, with Andy Reid, he's got a script and for his first 15 or 20 plays. And I don't think the script was ready for what the Patriots were going to do to him. And that means you almost have to check your game plan out and change everything that you're doing. And hey, to his credit, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, they did that. But I think that's what really got them off their plan, off kilter in the first half, is the Patriots just crossed them up on their defensive game plan.
You know, I go back when I look at this game, when it was absolute crunch time, the Chiefs, when they had to have a touchdown or score a field goal in 39 seconds to keep their season alive, they A+. Their offense, the last three drives, went 10 plays. They went 2 plays, 23 yards, set up by an interception by the defense. We should give them credit for there. 21-17, 5 play, 68-yard drive, 28-24, 4 play, 48-yard drive, 31 seconds, ties the game, never see the ball in overtime. Patriots' last three drives against the Chiefs' defense, 10 plays, 75, 6 for 65, 13 for 75 in overtime. You mentioned 13-19 on third down, but the other amazing number was the Patriots had twice as many snaps of the football, 94-47. No wonder the defense was gassed, which made me think even more reason to blitz and be aggressive because your pass rush wasn't getting there all game long, and they were gassed at the end, which leads me to Dee Ford. There is, and you brought this up, a lot of criticism of D for being offsides. He did not have a good game. Didn't register a tackle. Wasn't in there on some of the rundowns. That has been one of his liabilities in his career. He's not good against the run. But he had a breakout year. He's a Pro Bowler. And a lot of criticism him pointing out one play, which I think is unfortunate, unfair, because if that pass is off the hands of Gronkowski and dropped by Ward, then everybody's going to blame Ward for not picking it off. Or if it falls to the ground incomplete, nobody's talking about Ford being in the neutral zone necessarily. But I want to point to somebody else that hasn't been mentioned, and I don't want to try to say I'm being critical of this guy because he's an amazing player. But Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, you just said, was double-teamed. Kelce was not double-teamed all game long. Kelce had 2 catches of 23 yards, and he had a critical drop. We talk about the offense and what they didn't do in the first half. I thought one of the big drives in the second half was Tyreek Hill goes backwards for 12 yards. You're inside your own 5. You get a false start on Cam Irving, which is self-inflicted, and you have a 2nd and 15, and Kelce drops it. And now you're sitting here going up 3rd and 15 or whatever it was. We got to be somewhat safe. You punt, and then the Patriots get the short field and get 3 points out of that. Travis Kelce, why do you think he was not a big part of this game? Because the Patriots said the Hill's not going to beat us. Watkins, thank God, had a big game, and he was back healthy-wise, but Kelce just really wasn't part of the game plan, or he was part of the game plan. They just could never give him the ball. Why do you think that was?
Yeah, it was very curious. I mean, and Kelce, after the game, admitted, you know, he did not feel that he played as anywhere close to his best game, and so he was frustrated with his own play. You know, it didn't seem like that the Patriots were really doing anything to him that should have affected him. Like you said, I mean, 95% of the game they were doubling Tyreek Hill, so Kelce found himself in a lot of one-on-one matchups, and he was open. I mean, there were plays there that were open. It seemed like that there were two things that really got into it. You know, one was that, you know, the Chiefs were not expecting the Patriots to blitz as much as they did early. And the offensive line did not play well. So as a result, you know, Mahomes did not have a lot of time to make decisions. And that seemed, that was surprising that when you get in that situation that maybe Kelce's not your first option. That's not the way that you decide to go. But, you know, for whatever reason, that's not what happened. And then when you get in this position where you've got to start pushing the football, that's where Sammy Watkins really became the primary target. I mean, he had 4 catches, big game, 114 yards. I mean, he was the guy that ended up saving the offense and really being the difference maker. But Kelce should have. I mean, if Kelce gets more involved, I think you control the clock more.
Yep.
You're able to, you know, to stretch the game a little bit more. You're able to keep the Patriots from running, 94 offensive plays.
Yeah.
And controlling the ball as long as they did. And, I think it's situational. It was a little bit of game plan issues. But ultimately, Travis Kelce played a bad game.
Yeah,
he'll admit it.
He did. You know, when you look at this, you mentioned Belichick and his defensive coordinator, who doesn't really get mentioned because Belichick gets all the credit, Brian Flores, who might be a head coach here soon. Those two had a tremendous game plan, as you said. They had the Chiefs on the heels. That might explain why they didn't score in the first half. But on the flip side, and this goes back to the defensive coordinator, so we come full circle in this interview, Matthew, because the Chiefs do have an opening at D.C. I don't know if you – were you at the game or watching on TV? Where were you at during the game?
I was at the game in the press box.
You're at the game. Okay, so you might not have seen this, but during the CBS Sports broadcast, which Tony Romo was predicting what the Patriots need to do against the Chiefs defense before the ball was snapped right away, he was all over it. He was fantastic. But Evan Washburn, a sideline reporter for CBS Sports, early in the game, it was right, I think, the first drive of the game when the Patriots were driving, he chimed in and said the Patriots were not worried about the Chiefs and their crowd noise at Arrowhead, because they felt very comfortable with the play that they were going to use in the huddle, because they knew what the Chiefs do. Basically, they weren't worried about having to change the play at the line of scrimmage or going through a whole bunch of terminology. It was pretty simple. You know, they ran kill, 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 and they go to a run or they go to a short pass based on where the linebackers lined up. And to me, that was – it's not like I didn't know that already, that Bob Sutton's defense was predictable. But for somebody on a national TV broadcast in the AFC Championship game to say, we're not worried about the crowd noise, the Patriots admitted that to the CBS sports staff, and that we're comfortable with the play we have in the huddle – That floored me, and that to me is really the difference in the game. The Patriots had a tremendous defensive game plan. It threw the Chiefs for a while, and the Chiefs' defense, well, we know what happened there.
That's the confidence that comes with five Super Bowl titles.
Yes.
And eight AFC championships. I mean, that gives you the confidence to be able to say exactly that. And the Patriots know what they're doing. I mean, they do. I mean, that's the reason why they're in that situation year after year. I think as a Chiefs fan, you've got to be pretty optimistic about the fact that this could be you. I mean, you might be the team that's in that position, and you're saying things like that 10 years from now.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so where do you think the Chiefs need to go defensive coordinator-wise? What names are you hearing?
You know, probably I think the one that ends up being the most likely is, and the one that I think will be the front runner is Steve Spagnuolo. Mm-hmm. He's got some Andy Reid ties, goes back to Philadelphia. He's been a head coach in the league before, a lot of experience. That seems like the safe, logical choice. There's going to be some flashy names out there. You've been hearing Rex Ryan. I think that there's a lot of smoke there. I'm not sure there's much fire.
Yeah.
I could be surprised, but I don't know if that's the direction Andy Reid really wants to go. He'd be good, there's no doubt about it, but I don't know if that's exactly what the Chiefs want. Hey, there's a candidate on the staff, too, that's a really interesting choice, which is Mike Smith. He's done a really great job with the outside linebackers, really gotten some great reviews from the players. He's got some good experience. He's been a defensive coordinator in college. He was DC at Texas Tech for a year or two. There's some experience there, and the Chiefs do have a defensive staff that they really like. Even if the scheme hasn't necessarily worked, they've got guys that they like. I mean, Mark DeLeon, inside linebackers, obviously. Andy Reid's son, Britt, is on the defensive line. Al Harris has done a really good job with the secondary. I mean, the players rave about him. Eric Berry loves him. I mean, there's a lot to like in that defensive staff. And if you get someone and bring somebody in who retains a little bit of that institutional knowledge, it's probably not a bad thing. Like I said, especially since I think the assistants have gotten better reviews than Sutton got over the last couple of years. But those are probably the things I think that are going to get the early focus. Now, does it end up being somebody else? You know, do people turn down the job? It could be. But those are the names that I think I'd probably focus on right now.
What about Marvin Lewis? He was the defensive coordinator for the Ravens for 5 years, outstanding defensive coordinator. I know he's about Andy's age. I think he's 60, but he doesn't have a job. He's a head coach the last 15 years. Do you think he's a viable candidate?
I think he'd be an interesting candidate. I haven't really heard of him mentioned that much. Doesn't mean that he might not enter the picture. There's definitely some other names out there. I mean, there's some definite possibilities. I don't think this team's going to be limited by scheme or any other considerations. I mean, I think they're wide open whether they want to be a 4-3 or a 3-4 going forward. It's just going to be, you know, who they think is going to provide the best schematic advantage for them and let them make those decisions.
Okay, so we know the next step is to hire a new defensive coordinator. What else do the Chiefs need to do this offseason, in your opinion? I've read certainly that they want to lock up Tyreek Hill maybe to a contract extension. Chris Jones is the top of the priority list. He had a great year. What do they do with Dee Ford? Do they give him a long-term deal, franchise him? Let's start there. What do you think the Chiefs will or should do with Ford and then work backwards from there?
Yeah, I think you've hit on the exact three things that I think are the biggest priorities. You know, one, make a decision with Dee Ford. Hey, if you can get him to agree to an attractive deal, that's great. But if he wants to be paid, you know, as a high-end pass rusher, you know, top-of-the-class pass rusher, edge rusher, I don't think that you're ready to do that with the injury history and some of the inconsistencies. As good as this year was, I don't think you're ready to do that. So franchise tag seems like the most likely scenario. It's affordable, it's logical, and it gives you another year to kind of figure things out. But yeah, the other two, you've got to lock up Chris Jones and Tyreek Hill. Those are the top two priorities that they've got. I think it's going to be easier to get Jones done than Hill. If you give Tyreek Hill an Odell Beckham contract, in that ballpark. I'm sure he'll probably sign it. But he did go out and hired, you know, Drew Rosenhaus to be his new agent. So there are signs there that, hey, Tyreek wants to be paid as the top paid receiver in the NFL. And, you know, and Michael Thomas with the Saints is in kind of the same boat. So I think that they're going to be looking for the exact same kind of contract. And so if Thomas gets done, that might set a tone for, you know, what Hill's going to be looking for. After that, yeah, I mean, then you're moving into the draft and free agency. You know, indications are Steven Nelson, he's not signed yet, so that's a sign to me that he probably won't be back. So you're in the market for a corner. I think there's some other positions in the defense. You know, Alan Bailey's a free agent. You got to, you know, shore up that defensive line, do some things there. You know, not a whole lot else besides Hill. It really needs to be done on the offense, except for running back. Mm-hmm. But you got a lot of options there. I mean, you know, you can, as the Chiefs have shown, you can find a great running back in the middle rounds of the draft. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's how they approach that, especially now they got Damian Williams signed as kind of their placeholder back for now.
That's how it's going to be really critical for the Chiefs to be really viable and really good, as you said, for the next 5 to 10 years, how they handle the salary cap and who they give big money to and who they don't, because the Eric Berry contract has not worked out so far. Justin Houston has not lived up to that deal. And a lot of these long-term deals usually don't work out, no matter what sport it is or what team it is. And then on top of that, there are the reports out there the Chiefs would give Patrick Mahomes $200 million after next season. So the Chiefs got to be careful not to put too much money towards certain players to prevent them from doing what they want to do to keep their, well, not that he's going to disappear. They still have his rights and everything for a while, but how they handle Patrick Mahomes, right?
Exactly, and that's exactly why you have to get Chris Jones and Tyreek Hill done now.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get that done, spread the money out over a little bit longer period of time. Sign them now, because if those guys hit the open market next year at the exact same time that you're trying to get the Patrick Mahomes deal done, those guys will command top dollar. So, you know, and Brett Veach, the day he was hired, as an introductory press conference, he made a point about talking about the fact that they're going to sign guys and get them extended early when they're guys that they want to keep. And that was a mistake that John Dorsey made. He did not make the extension with Justin Houston and Eric Berry when he had the chance. This was the exact point when you should have gotten those deals done. He waited, and as a result, he had to overpay to keep them. And that strangled them, is continuing to strangle them on the salary cap. You could have had both those guys for almost 20% less than you ended up signing them for.
Absolutely. Yep, I get you. And if you wait too long, then you risk either overpaying, like you said, they've already done, or you risk losing the guy altogether, and then that puts you backwards when you lose a guy like Chris Jones or Tyreek Hill. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Matthew, appreciate your time today. A lot of people upset with the overtime rules. The Saints game worked out. Both teams got the ball because the defense actually got a stop. Coin toss is kind of irrelevant from that standpoint. The percentages, I think, are about 50.7 in favor of the team that wins the coin toss. It's almost basically 50-50. Chiefs lost the coin toss the other day, and their offense never stepped a foot on the field. What is your solution? What would be the Matthew Derrick NFL overtime rules if you were commissioner?
I no solution. I really don't, because I feel like, you know, we've been talking about this my entire life. I haven't been able to come up with a better idea.
Uh-huh.
At least the current situation where, you know, you get a chance to get the ball, if you get a stop or you hold them to a field goal, is infinitely better than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do? I mean, I've heard people say that, you know, both teams get a chance to get the ball. Great. Both teams get the ball, score a touchdown, third possession. It's still going to be a team, if you go to sudden death at that point, it's still going to be down to the team that won a coin toss.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm not sure that there is a great scenario. I mean, I would love the college rule mm-hmm. in the NFL, but I also know that the NFL doesn't want six-hour-long football games at the end, and suddenly it's going to be turned into a 95-88 slugfest because nobody can get a stop in overtime. But that would probably be the most entertaining. I just don't think it's ever going to happen.
Here's my solution, and I don't know if it's a good one, but it would be you play like they are. It's another 15-minute quarter. You play regular football, but in college, the third overtime, you have to go for two. Right off the bat, you have to go for two. There's no and you can't even kick a field goal. How about that? You take the kicking out of the game except for a kickoff. So you get the ball. The Patriots go down and score a touchdown, extra point, fine. 38-31. Chiefs get the ball back. They go down, score a touchdown. Well, they can't get the extra point in my new rules. So they have to go for two. So if they go for two and they don't get it, 37-31, Chiefs go down, touchdown, have to go for two. They get it, they win the game. If they don't, yes, the game could keep going on and on, but it's less likely you're going to have multiple ties in overtime if you force both teams to go for two and they can't settle for field goals or kick extra points.
Yeah, and that's an interesting idea. And then there's another one that, you know, I've thought about before, which is that, frankly, you just keep playing at the end of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You go to an extra quarter, you go to it, but you pick up at the exact same spot.
I mean,
you know, the team's got the ball exactly where they had it, exact same down. Just act like it's a brand new quarter, and then the other team would get a possession as well.
And then no coin flip would be involved in that situation.
And no coin flip's involved. You know, it's really more decided on the field. If you get a stop, like you do, but it's not determined necessarily. Hey, there's still some strategy involved, actually. I mean, there should be some strategic decisions about whether you try to hold on to the football, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a little bit longer so you get that first possession of the overtime period. But if they can come up with anything that gets rid of the coin flip, that's probably the best way to go. Unless they go back and revert back to the coin flip at the beginning of the game.
Yes, yes.
Maybe you win the coin flip at the beginning of the game and you say, okay, tell you what, well, I'm going to defer my choice until overtime.
Well, and I've thought this, you earn home field advantage throughout the year. You're the number one seed. Shouldn't you go ahead and get to have the ball first whenever, if you defer, that's your choice. Don't even mess with a coin flip, and then overtime you get the ball first. Now, granted, if the Chiefs are in Foxborough, Chiefs wouldn't like that, but that would be an extra reward for getting home field advantage playing 16 games, is that there are no coin flips. We get a dictate. We get the ball, they get the ball first, then we get it in the second half, but in overtime, we get the ball first.
It would be more logical than just simply a coin flip.
Amen, brother. I'm with you
Absolutely.
On that one. I'm with you. All right, how can people read your work, Matthew?
Go to ChiefsDigest.com is the easiest way. You can follow me on Twitter, Matt Derrick, and we're also on Facebook at Chiefs Digest as well.
Great stuff as always, Matthew. Always appreciate the time. Have a terrific offseason, and we look forward to talking with you when we know who the new defensive coordinator is and the Chiefs get ready to make another Super Bowl run. Thanks for the time, man.
Sounds good. Take care, Wade.
Take care. Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest, our guest today on The Sports Ticket.